Hi guys, how's everyone doing today?
Howdy. Hi guys.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Are you?
I'm great.
Are you? Barry?
Yes.
Dad?
I'm pretty good.
Pretty good. By the way, just as an aside, my favorite moment of the Super Bowl was the Larry David ad. That was really, really good. I don't know what kind of like Bitcoin that I just bought, but I really enjoyed it nonetheless.
It was
you
good.
You saw Larry David and said yes.
I said yes, whatever the product is,
whatever it
I'm
is.
Buying.
Uh-huh.
Where do you guys want to start? I think we've got some things to talk about today.
You want to start with Super Bowl? Are we going to talk about halftime?
We could talk about the halftime show. Were you surprised that people didn't like it?
No. And
I was.
I've been thinking about this for a couple of days. The further away from it, the more it feels like a pretty important moment to me. Am I surprised that people didn't like it? No. But I think the people who don't like it and post on social media that they didn't like it, it says more about them than anything else.
Gonna have to fill me in. I cannot believe I'm heading to Barry Quarter to get the social media reaction. But what am I missing? What is the going complaint about the halftime show?
It was hip hop.
So
a lot of older people don't like it.
Well, a lot of younger people don't like the Who.
Exactly. And if it had been Florida Georgia Line, it would. I know, but it was the first, not the first hip hop halftime show, but it was the first big, huge production like that. It was a pretty important moment. It was a pretty intentional moment, I thought. And I think it's being received that way by a lot of people who grew up with that music.
What do you mean? It feels like a shift. Production. What do you mean big, huge production? I mean, they've done that kind of large production stuff.
Yeah,
before.
Yeah. I meant start to finish. Entirely dedicated to hip hop and in particular those iconic, characters that were part of Dre and Snoop and Eminem. I mean,
this is one of those things that I'll be honest with you. If you didn't like it, I don't give a shit.
Exactly.
Exactly. I don't care.
I got some news for you. This might surprise you. I didn't watch it.
I am stunned. I cannot. For anybody that doesn't watch the Super Bowl, what were you doing?
This will surprise you even more. I was watching golf. the Phoenix Open.
Yes, the Waste Management Open.
Yeah,
the People's Championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got those trucks.
Yeah,
those waste management trucks.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually what they tried to hit into. It's a new course. They're just hitting the grass fence.
Garbage ball.
But that's not happening while the Super Bowl's happening.
Early on it was.
Yeah, and then we just watched more golf after that.
Was there more golf to watch?
There's a golf channel.
You need a nap? I mean, what is...
Wait a second. I love how Taco just comes out and says, it's so, like, he's so surprised. There's a golf channel.
There's a whole channel.
So let me get this straight. Because I know who did this. It was your dad, right? It was you hanging out with dad. And so dad said, no, we're just going to keep it on golf the rest of the day. Forget the Super Bowl.
That's what he said. He went to the, he was in the lounge at the Council Fire at the golf course. And he'd been there since 9 in the morning, just sitting there drinking beer and watching golf. It was too cold to play. That's what he said. And then like 4, he calls me and he's like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, nothing. He's like, oh, you want to come over and have a beer? Sure. So he called reinforcements in because he'd been, drinking there all day. So then we stayed until about 7 or 8.
Yeah, but at no point did anyone say, hey, guys, the Super Bowl's on. We should at least turn it on.
A few people did, but nobody wanted to watch it.
Wow.
I'm stunned.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm stunned.
If you'd have said you watched the Puppy Bowl, I would be less stunned than you spent.
I'm stunned that I watched that much golf.
Although, I mean, let's be honest, if there's anybody in my life that is good at this, it's you. Just having something on and Taco just being okay with whatever it is.
That's true.
It really doesn't really matter. He's,
What did you say? He's a flow. He's goes with the flow.
Go with the flow. Sure. Yeah. And I was, of course, I'm drinking on the old man's tab. So yeah, I'll have another right over here. Thanks.
I mean, you could be watching, you know, Barry swimming naked. Yeah, and you'd be like, yeah, I'm okay with this. So long as
yeah.
If there's is there beer? If there's still beer,
yeah, I'll watch it. Yeah.
Beer me.
But it wasn't a PBR, and that's the problem.
No, they have Ultra though, and that's pretty good.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Did you do a taste test challenge? Do you think you could tell a difference between Ultra and your favorite beer of all time, which is the Miller High Life?
Well, yeah, at this point I don't know. My confidence is shook. I did have another High Life. I had another High Life the other day, and it was pretty good. So, you know, I'm still happy with my choice. Pretty good.
I'm very surprised. Taco spent the evening watching golf and not the Super Bowl. It's fascinating to me to be in a sports complex, which a golf course is essentially. But, you know, you get all that, you know, male energy and all the TVs, and not one of them happens to be on the biggest event of the entire year.
Oh, I agree. I mean, there's like 40 TVs in there and they're huge. It's like the whole wall is TVs. And,
every single one of them is on golf?
It was all on golf. Yeah. That's what a waste. Yeah.
What a waste of time.
Wow. Well, you were hanging out with your dad. I'll give you that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And he likes football, but he's more into college. He doesn't really do professional.
But it's the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. I don't either, but it's the Super Bowl.
I was surprised too. I figured he would have at least wanted, you know, turn it on. Let's see what's happening.
Well, the halftime show was great. I had no problem with it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I just think that it's just part of the nomenclature at this point that we all just hate everything.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. No matter what happens, we have to hate it. I was listening to sports talk radio, it was today. And people were bitching and complaining that the game wasn't good enough. Right. I mean, this is how, the recency bias of our world, they can't even, they need it to come to some, it needs to have a season-ending cliffhanger, or it needs to have a season-ending big explosion like Ozark does.
Yeah.
But,
wow.
We didn't really like the game. People just want to hate stuff, and I don't really understand it. And I'll be honest with you, Barry, I guess maybe it's because I'm older or I just have stopped caring, but I don't even listen to it anymore.
I didn't spend any time with it. It's just, you know, I look, see the people complain. I'm like, oh, okay. Couldn't see that coming, you know, especially from you or whatever. Hated it. Worst one ever. Okay.
Is this mostly on Facebook, you think? Well, because that's where you spend most of your time.
Yeah, I spend more time than there than the others. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, this is, we got to get you off of Facebook.
I guess. Okay. Tell me which one.
That's where all the boomers are.
Let's get to Snapchat. We'll start sending them some nudes, Taco.
Yeah.
Awesome. Don't need that.
I want to get into the real quick, the Jack Antonoff conversation that. Surprisingly blew up out of nowhere. I didn't anticipate it getting as much traction as it did, but if you didn't follow it, we had a conversation with Jack Antonoff from Bleachers last week. And afterwards, by the way, we don't talk about this enough, how well the consequence of sound people do these write-ups, and they spend so much of their time and energy promoting the podcast, and they do such a great job with it. So they did an incredible write-up of the Jack Antonoff conversation. And part of it, they highlighted a kind of, I guess, controversial moment where Jack Antonoff sort of equated Damon Albarn and his description of Taylor Swift as a songwriter to be Trumpian. And I think that got a lot of attention. Consequence did a great job with it. Then it went to Pitchfork and Rolling Stone. And then all of a sudden, NME. And every publication all of a sudden now has the What podcast talks to Jack Antonoff. And Jack Antonoff says blankety blank. It was kind of interesting to watch. But at the end of the day, I kept like trying to replay it in my head. And I must totally admit, I didn't go back and listen to it. I didn't ask him anything about Damon Albarn and Taylor Swift.
Yeah, be one thing if you could claim, boy, I saw that coming. I
I set him up for that one, old
pal. I put that ball on the tee, didn't I?
Yeah. You know? I'll get the sound bite. I smell it.
Man, I am so good at this. Watch what happens. I will. No, I didn't even ask him about it. I meant to bring up, the whole point of me bringing that up was because I wanted to hear how ridiculous some of his requests can be. And I knew he'd have a good one, and it was Barbara Streisand, right? Well, that was the whole point. And, you know, just to get there, he mentioned being literal, and I thought I'd throw in, maybe I did it subconsciously. I don't even know. But all I did was mention, he talks about, you know, you either a songwriter or you're not. And then I said, well, I mean, if you're Damon Albarn, you think it's a very literal thing.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, you did put it on a tee.
I didn't expect it to be that.
Well, I mean, I don't know. How would you?
Okay, but here's the part that I'm surprised you guys haven't busted my balls about yet, because around here, it's been, around the station, it's been a big laugh riot on all Brad guy's part. So if you go back and watch the video, right when he says the most quotable part of the interview, right, the news part of the interview, he's doing his, you know, he also should just shut the fuck up or whatever he says, right? Literally, if you're watching the video, while he's saying the most newsworthy thing, you see this happen.
But I mean, but you know what? I expect it from politicians. I expect it from idiots and herbs and.
I'm like, if this video finds its way to, I don't know, Entertainment Tonight or something, you're going to see this idiot at a radio station go.
I didn't watch the video. I think I listened to it. That's funny. I'm going to go back and watch.
This is why you should subscribe to the YouTube channel.
You got to watch the video.
If you're not watching the video, what happened was, I guess I was rearranging my chair and I hit the lever that sinks you down, and all of a sudden he's just talking to an empty screen. Like I went down. It was such a clown car moment of my life.
Nice.
And like in the middle, the other thing too, and the only reason I think the guy that works here noticed it is because during the interview, you hear me go, whoop! Like out of my chair. Absolutely so stupid.
Yeah, there you go.
So instead of Brad Stinks, it's Brad Sinks.
Brad Sinks, yeah.
Brad Sinks.
Watch this guy. He's a great interviewer. Watch him disappear. Whoops.
He doesn't even need to be there. God, he's good.
It was a good job, though. It was good. The whole interview was good. People should go back and listen to all of it.
It was. And it was a very highly downloaded episode too.
Especially not just, you know, that part, but talking about Super Jam and how much he loves Bonnaroo and all that. I mean, he says everything we've been saying for 5 years.
Yeah, I hope we didn't spoil his return. Something tells me that
He's not going back to that guy.
Not coming back to that show.
That's 60 Minutes, that Brad guy.
Can't even get a chair to work properly.
That guy pulls stuff out. You didn't mean to say.
I don't trust that idiot. Can't even operate a chair. I was told that he would do it again, but now that I'm seeing the reaction, I don't know if he's coming back. I don't know if he's coming back. And I really wish that he would, because he was actually, I had so much fun with the conversation. And the other thing I noticed was, man, it's just so polarizing whenever you take sides or shit on Taylor Swift. It's one way or the other, right? It is the most, it's like Kanye with her. She is the most polarizing of a person in the industry as you can find. So believe me, I've heard some stories about her, and what you don't want is to have her PR people come after you, because she's got a machine. She has a machine, and they are on it.
You know, I was going to ask about that. And I like her. I don't know a whole lot about her. What is the deal? Is it just because she's so huge that she becomes such a target? I mean, I don't. What has she done that makes her, you know, such a target?
Well, first off, I think that if I could be fair, because I don't want to just come out and, you know, bash on Taylor, because I do think that, you know, there are some really good moments in her career and a lot of things that she should be celebrated for. I think that, you know, she's not been afraid of rocking the boat and then will act like the martyr afterwards, as if, why is everyone attacking me? As if she hasn't, you know, literally thrown,
you know, she's had some pretty strong opinions. Yeah, I'll say, I'll agree with that.
So, you know, with all that being said, she also, I think there was a part in the early part of her life where she was sort of slut shamed. And I bet that she doesn't really appreciate that too well. So, no, she doesn't really give a damn. And if you are as successful as she is, why would you give a damn? Now you get to roast anybody and everybody you want. I think it's the sort of martyrdom that she always seems to lay on pretty thick. With all that being said, it is a pretty stroke of genius to have your entire catalog sold out from under you and then just redo it all.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
Doing it again. Like her or not. I mean, that's a pretty, impressive.
All I know is a lot of people that I know and respect who I would not have thought were Taylor Swift fans love her because they love her. Her shows are great. And then I have a friend who is a musician who defends her and says, you know, first of all, people need to realize she pays the salary of a lot of people.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And for no other reason than that, you know, leave her alone. She's an industry unto herself. So
another one that does that, and a lot of people don't even know it, Dave Matthews is one of the most, is a giant in the industry. Now you may think it's just some 90s band who's going back on tour, but if not for, you know, Dave Matthews, there's no ATO or Red Light. There is no Bonnaroo. You know, the umbrella that he has, it's unreal. It's absolutely unreal. And, you know, she's really become sort of that. You know, there's only a few people in this industry that have that kind of sprawling type of, you know, stretch, sprawling type of, you know, reach. Yeah. Dre, back to the Super Bowl, Dre being one of them. Dre's got a incredible, you know, platform.
We're talking
there.
Hundreds, Jay-Z. You know, dozens and dozens, hundreds of people who are employed because of these guys. So I mean, it's not just a few. So
look, I mean, and you don't see Jay-Z or Dre or Dave Matthews taking as many shots as Taylor does. But with all that being said, you know, there is some insufferable moments that, you know, she has, you know, been in, and you could probably chalk that up to being a child and young and, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Who
knows? Or just having that big a spotlight put on you. You know, we all can sit here and say what we think we would act like and how we would act being that ginormous. Don't know till it's you. So,
yeah. I feel like there was something else about the Jack interview that I wanted to bring up, and I don't necessarily remember what it was. And we did find out that it's 1984. All songs from 1984. I think we all could just assume that, but hearing him say it was pretty cool.
Right.
Had we had some more time, I probably would have, you know, jumped into more Bonnaroo talk, to be honest with you, but we had such a limited amount of time. And, you know, I had to, you know, set up the Damon Albert conversation somehow. Yeah.
You got what you wanted and got out of there, man. Yeah. That's pro.
The big news that came down today. Did you guys see what Coachella said?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. This just came out earlier. And if you're listening to this on a different day, you probably already know, but the news came out that Coachella was going to drop all COVID regulations and restrictions from their festival in April. I don't know if I can see a calendar, and the calendar, you know, it looks like April is January, February, March, 2 months away. And they are already dropping all restrictions. So you don't need a negative test. You don't need a proof of vaccine. You don't need literally anything for 150,000 people. Your thoughts, Barry, anything?
Not surprised. It feels like with all the others, what Walmart did the same. It feels like we're heading that way. And what I think will happen is we'll see that, and then individuals will be making their own decisions. I mean, I had a couple of conversations just today about people, another musician who canceled a local gig. He just doesn't feel right. And yet he was in a luncheon room with about 35 people you know, no mass. There's one mass. So I'm not surprised.
Well, I think of it like, so Mardi Gras is happening right now. And we've been going to parade after parade, ball after ball. And there are moments where I feel a little, you know, a little close, a little tight. So I'll put the mask on and I, you know, maybe it makes me feel better or something.
Right. That's what I mean.
But that is an open air, open to, you know, I haven't paid a ticket for it. I can just walk in and go home, whatever I want to. The only thing about a festival like this is that if you at least have a COVID test or a, you know, proof of vaccine, at least there's some sort of layer of protection. At least it feels like a layer of protection. You don't feel weird about not having that?
Oh, I do. That's what I'm saying. But it's an individual. I think it will become an individual thing. Like you just said, you feel weird about it. So you either put a mask on or you back away or go home or whatever. But I think the majority of people are just, they're over it. They're ready. They're done. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's definitely the vibe I feel.
Well, that's the way that I feel. You know, I did everything that I was supposed to do. You know, I've done all my parts, and at some point I've got to, you know, we got to get out, as my uncle would say, get out amongst them, go live. You know, but it does, you know, make me feel better when I go into a restaurant and they're checking vaccine cards. It does make me feel better. You know, I think it would make me feel better if there was some sort of layer of at least perceived precaution. But you know,
the reality is that's probably all it is perceived.
Probably.
Yeah. I think it's mostly theater. I mean, how many people did we hand our vaccination cards to at a restaurant in New Orleans? And they just like, okay, yeah, fine. I could have handed them a, you know, an Uno card or something.
Yeah.
They don't really care. They're just, okay, here you go.
You know what? You say that.
I did it.
I've had that card 6, 7, 8 months. I think I've shown it one time. And that was.
Well, you're in a different place, though. I mean,
but it's my place. It's whatever.
I understand, but I don't know anybody that city has not acted as if COVID was happening since COVID began. They don't. They've never pretended like this thing was a thing. Here, Russ has seen it. Here, you have to show it to get anywhere.
Which now, is strange, isn't it? Because you're in a city of disasters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're not our disasters, you know.
But
yeah,
they're disasters, and you've seen all of them. Everything but locusts that I can think of.
Oh, I've dated a few. But Russ, I mean, Russ is right. I mean, if he showed a vaccine card that had a penis drawn on it, nobody knows the difference. Yeah, that's fine. He'll take it.
Pretty much. I mean, nobody's checking to make sure that the name matches your ID, and you know. But you know, I'm happy to show it. I'm proud that I got it. You know,
it's a lot to put on wait staff. I mean, it is. It's tough enough. They got to check your ID and worry about that. And now you put this on them, and you know they've been yelled at and screamed at and called everything. So I'm sure they're over it too. But I mean, like I said, I'm not saying it's right.
Well, I mean, the other thing too that, you know, not many people talk about is, I mean, the state of California, you know, basically they're doing it because the state of California has lifted the restrictions here. But, you know, it was at one point the most restrictive state in the entire country. And there might be a tad bit of politics happening right now. So,
coming up?
You know, but also at the end of the day, you know, it does feel like the numbers are coming down. It does feel like this thing is starting to go away. But every time that we felt like that, it just comes right back.
Yeah. I'm not really saying you're right or wrong or they're right or wrong. It's just where we are.
So today we haven't even talked about this yet, but today we're going to have a band from Nashville on Coin. I don't know if you know Coin. Coin's been to Bonnaroo before. They got a couple of, you know, really, you know, pretty good hits, including one I think is such a fun song, Talk Too Much. They're a great live band. We spent about 20 minutes with those kids earlier last week. And, you know, I think that my first thought was, oh, good, we get to talk to some kids who have never been to Bonnaroo. And then I forgot that they were at Bonnaroo. Yep. We're getting to the point, Barry, that, you know, 17, 18, 19 years in going to this festival, I've forgotten half the people that I've seen.
I'd be stunned if you if it was different. I loved hearing the story of how they got there, especially the drummer. Was that Ryan? That's his name. Talking about it, he told his parents, okay, I'm going to go. Next time I go, I'll be playing there. Mm-hmm. That's pretty funny.
I mean, that's some Joe Burrow bravado, yeah, don't you think?
I like it. It was a good interview. It's fun.
So we're going to talk to Coin, but first, if you could, because it really helps us out, it helps the Consequence people who have been so wonderful to us for the last year. If you could rate and review the podcast, that would be quite helpful. You know, just takes 2 seconds. I don't know if you need to do it again, if you have already done it before, but, you know, start a whole new account. Yeah, rate it from a whole new account. No, rate and review. It really helps the whole thing, the whole operation. So yeah, let's talk to Coin afterwards. I want to talk about a Bonnaroo ticket giveaway.
Ooh.
Okay.
Again, we're going to do that. Nice.
Yeah, we're going to do it again.
Yeah. Coin, on the What Podcast?
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My home life, because of you guys, is so difficult. Do you know how often my wife walks around saying, "You talk too much," every day of my life?
I'm so happy that, what a beautiful accident.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Somebody finally put it into words.
Yeah.
Brad's you guys, life.
You wrote the theme song to my life. Yeah.
I'm so glad. Unknowingly, we're torturing you. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it is pretty impressive to write a hook that can be repeated every single day for years and years and years later.
Yeah, as an insult, I'll say, yeah.
So let's start here, because you're talking to some fellow Tennesseans, Barry in Chattanooga, Russ in outside of Chattanooga, and I left Chattanooga 2 years ago. You're right up the road in Nashville. Let's start at Belmont. Because, you know, for those that don't know, you guys met in college, right?
Yeah, around that. Yeah, definitely. Formative years. Yeah, Joe and Chase met in a music theory class. And then I was dating someone who sat beside them who volunteered me to basically go jam in Chase's dorm room. So that's how the band started.
I know a guy. You should call.
I think the word jam was definitely used.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
at that spry age.
Yeah. Is anyone using the word jam anymore, by the way? Nobody's.
I mean, I think they use free trial.
Free trial.
That's so good.
Were you just looking for, you know, somebody to free trial with on weekends, or were you guys looking for a band to put a band together?
Barry, I'll be honest with you. I have no idea what we were after. Yeah.
Well, that's what I wondered. I mean,
we had the expectations of being the biggest band of the world, but also the hope of absolutely nothing. So it was a weird time where, like, you know that you want to make songs that insult people around the world. And then you also, you also have no idea what to do or what the next step is. So I'm just so glad I met these people. And, It's bizarre that essentially fate led us to be I just can't believe this is the same people that we started the band with. Like, I feel like there's always some turnover.
Yeah 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Almost, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Was one of your early tracks Brad's Hair Is Overrated? Because that would
it's the new one.
Cut me straight to the core.
Did you go to school? That always fascinates me, how people get together. I mean, you hear about, we put an ad in the paper or put a poster up on a bar, but Belmont's a pretty serious music school. So you obviously went there for a reason. Was it, I mean, you said you weren't looking to start a band. What were you thinking career-wise that made you go to Belmont?
Well, I think each of us can speak to this, but moving to Nashville was more of, like, I think we all saw it as somewhat like serving as an incubator for our creativity, and like it just felt like fertile ground at the time. It just felt like the next logical step, and not as terrifying as LA or New York seemed at the time. It was just like a baby step forward. And so Belmont was for sure just a catalyst for me to move there. And I think speak the same for Joseph. Just getting to a city with like-minded people, and you know, in a place where just some kind of movement was happening. And Belmont, it was less, my dad was a songwriter. And so I always kind of saw it as a possibility to play music and really do it as a career. It was never like insane for me. So that was always beautiful to have that realistic element at my, as an archetype. But I can't put it into words. I was not off to start a band. I just had never played music in front of people. And Joseph and Ryan had high school bands, and they were like, you know what, like, we know how to like do this kind mm-hmm. of, and iron sharpens iron, and you know, here we are.
When you guys were like first writing, do you still have some of those tracks? Do you still go back to them? What are you doing with those things?
Honestly, we wrote four songs because the goal of the band was to play like just like one show, just see what happens. I just wanted to feel what that felt like, and I had just recently been to my first concert around that time. It was just like, this seems like what a beautiful connecting experience, and I really wanted to experience that for myself. And like I said, they helped me, but we wrote four songs. So we played our first four song set, which was 13 minutes soaking wet. And we actually put those songs out, and that's those songs led to. We've actually never not put out a song. I don't think we've written a bunch now, but like around that early stages, we just kind of just kept putting out everything.
Whatever we had to date would get released and then would help us have a longer set list.
Yeah.
where was the show, by the way?
Oh, wow.
So it was at there was a magazine that existed briefly in Nashville. I don't think it does anymore.
I don't know.
It's called Native Magazine, and it was their launch party, which is such a funny word, but it was, and it was in this warehouse building that sounded like a basketball gym. So we always joke that we played in a basketball gym because it just sounded like one. So we had like a drum shield, and like we were like the loudest band.
We were the first band and the loudest.
The first band and the loudest band.
And the shortest.
And I know we've all told this story differently, about the same, but one detail we all remember is that the next show we were offered was by someone from a venue, what was it, like 12th and Porter?
Something like that.
And they were like, hey, if you guys can just play a little quieter, like, we'll get you some gigs, and you can play next weekend if you want. We were like, okay. And I don't think we ever got quieter, but we definitely did the gig, and then one gig led to the next, so.
That's some pretty lousy A&R advice, to be honest with you.
I was like, play quiet. Loud was like our genre, you know?
Yeah, that was your thing?
It kind of is.
I want to ask Joseph and Chase, when Ryan's girlfriend approached you, how many times did she have to keep suggesting it? Was it first time or?
It was the first time.
I don't know because I wasn't there. I still don't know the story.
It worked out well, obviously.
I ended up hanging out with Ryan like 2 days later.
Yeah.
Became buddies.
Yeah. So she just really overheard us talking about starting a band. She was like, you guys need a drummer. And just really volunteered the rest of his soul for the rest of his existence.
I'm 10 years in the saddle at this point, so.
Yeah, it worked out. Good
That'd have been really uncomfortable if he sucked.
We got the free trial.
I feel like we all kind of sucked, so. It was good.
It would work out.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kristen.
And you guys just decided the fertile ground of Nashville, I guess, proved. Good for you. You stayed, and you never decided to bail. Why is that?
We definitely chose. We moved away, and we've kind of. It'll always be home, and it's always going to be roots, and it's always going to be where we leave for tour from. But you know, I mean, who knows? Who knows where we'll be forever? But we definitely love it, and it's always served as a reset. So even times we've spent so much time in LA, or Ryan moved to LA, Joseph moved to Brooklyn for a while. Mm-hmm. It's always that means of just like reset and come back to the roots, and it's always served as such a wonderful home place for us.
Speaking of drummers, Barry, I got news this morning that one of our best friends in the world, Jared from Repeat Repeat, had you on their podcast. Recently.
Yeah. Jared's a good friend. I mean, I've known him and his wife since he was working at Burger Up, and I used to work on the same street, and I feel like we were just kind of doing the scrappy, you know, part-time job thing for a while, and it's been cool to watch him and his band flourish, and he's kept up with us too. But yeah, they're great people.
You know, I've known Jared a long time. I never knew he worked at Burger Up.
Yeah, that's how we met. And he was like, he always would take care of me and be like, dude, like, when are you playing a show? And I was like, I don't know, when do you play a show? We had like a fun relationship. So he's a good guy.
Nice. So when you get the records done, you get the tours moving, and then you get the call from Bonnaroo. That first show that you did in 2017, talk about that, what that meant for you in your career, if it meant anything, and what that, like, that entry into festival world is like.
Yeah, honestly, I think at the time, it's so part of the zeitgeist, especially like in Southern culture and just America in general, you know? And I feel like there's something about, Russ just showed up. What's up, Russ? How's it going?
He must have
been something. Here the whole time. What do you,
where was say, hi to, say hi to Lord Taco.
It's literally going to be on his tombstone. I've been here the whole time.
I like that. Yeah, there's something really special about being from Nashville and it being so close and almost like a hometown show, and just to participate in such a cultural moment was really special, and we're so glad to be playing again this summer.
Along those lines, I don't know, Brad, if you looked at their tour, this list for the next 2 or 3, 4 months looks like somebody's wish list, right? I mean, this is pretty sweet what you guys going. You've got where to go? Top of the list. Harrisburg.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Later this month. Let's start there. But then you go to Dublin, Belfast, London, Cardiff, Liverpool, Birmingham. I'm skipping some. Glasgow, Leeds. And then you've got Shaky Knees, Forecastle, Governor's Ball, and then Bonnaroo. That's not a bad summer.
No, and a lot more to come as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're really excited. We're super grateful. It feels like, honestly, what you just said really resonates, because we used to look at band's tour schedules and be like, oh man, that is so sick, hopefully we could do that one day.
I know, it is special. It's crazy when I appreciate you putting that perspective, because we've worked so hard for this, and you know, you walk inch by inch, and you were like, of course I should be stronger than yesterday, of course I should do better than yesterday, but nothing's guaranteed, and it's so cool to just take it in and breathe and realize that the songs we're writing are resonating with people out there, and people are assigning their own meaning and to them. It's just special.
When you said that Bonnaroo is so part of the Southern culture and the zeitgeist, had you been before?
I had never been.
No. I had friends that started going as early as like 16 and experimenting with LSD and that sort of thing. So I was from Cleveland, Ohio, and had a lot of friends who did like the party. Let's go to, you know, it's a, you know, Nashville's only like 8 hours from Ohio, so I feel like a lot of people would caravan down. But I actually remember, and my mother brought this to my attention, but there was a large group of kids going, and I remember I couldn't afford a ticket. And my parents were like, we can't afford the ticket to send you down with them. But like, and I just remember saying, okay, I'll just wait until I play it one day, which was such a stubborn thing. And it's such my personality to like set that goal for myself. But when we actually played it, I was like, I told you. So
that's pretty
screaming
cool.
At yourself in the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah. You've done it. Which is funny. We didn't even have a mirror at the, at Bonnaroo the first year. I remember thinking that the hospitality could be improved slightly. So
yeah, we'll see
what's up this summer. Yeah.
Well, if you ever talk to Bishop Briggs, the trailers that you stay in, they don't hold up, because I basically destroyed it in a matter of about 10 seconds. Just trying to open a bottle, the whole thing came down, and it's.
Oh, I believe
you're right.
It.
I think one of my favorite stories ever. She said, "Just leave." She just finally leave. Said, "Just leave."
Was she in it when it collapsed?
Well,
no. Yeah. We were all there. I ripped down the wall accidentally, and the whole thing went crashing down.
Yeah, he tried to open it wasn't a screw cap, so he tried to pop it on the side. And
I was doing the really impressive, like, manly thing. I'll take care of this for you, little lady. And I went to open up the bottle, and as I did that, the front of the cabinetry came crashing down to the ground. The Topo Chico flies across the room. Everything sprays, and literally after the mess of the day, she just says,
"And then he did it again.
Just leave." Yeah, and then
he did it twice, and that one spun around on the ground. That's when she said, "Just leave."
Yeah, hospitality could improve a little bit. So now you have this sort of world, you know, jaunt that you have. You come back for the summer, and Barry went through the list: Forecastle, Gov Ball, Bonnaroo,
Shaky Knees. Yeah.
Shaky Knees. I don't want you to pick one, but pick one.
Honestly, we're playing today at Appalachian State in Boone, North Carolina. We're on the bus right now, and I'm just as thrilled to be playing here as anywhere, and I'm just so grateful for any time we get to play in front of humans.
Yeah, as this thing starts to normalize again, you know, getting on a stage and having people safely attend events, whatever that might look like, we're like so excited to play anywhere. Yeah.
Are the European shows much different for you guys?
We've only been there a couple times, and they've been super special. The world is a wonderful place.
Everybody sings along the same, right?
It's crazy.
I hope so. Yeah. I'm grateful for anybody showing up. It's great.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
I love the new single. I think that you guys feels like you got like a fast track. It feels like there's a avenue for you guys when you start to put something together that is, you know, whatever the next step is. Do you keep yourself in sort of like a lane, or knowing where your sound is, or are you willing to pretty much go, you know, and make it Judah and the Lion and try, you know, let's try a hip hop song? Are you that far out of the lane, or do you think that you're pretty in the pocket and you stay exactly where you are?
I mean, somewhat of all of the above. We had a really interesting time in 2020 with, you know, of course, tour getting canceled, and I'm sure everybody had a wild year, but we just set out to write as many types of songs as we've wanted to write over the years, and kind of, instead of letting our influences creep into our music and the way we see it, we just embraced and fully jumped into, you know, being like just paying homage to our inspirations. And so we were able to get out a lot of things that would have otherwise been kind of squirrely to put into our songs. So by getting out a lot, I think that it was such a good period of time where we were able to really experiment with things and really hone in on what we love to do and what brings us the most purpose. So no, we don't have a lane other than to do what feels right and you know, give the song the love it deserves. Somebody told us one time that each song is a universe, and you know, if it needs more trees, it needs more trees. It needs more oxygen, it needs more oxygen. And so you give the song and what it needs, and then stop like questioning with the confines of what does the album need? What does it feel more like coin, whatever these constructs you create for yourself, just give the song the love it needs and then everything will work out. You don't have to put it out, you know, but I think it's so important to fully realize these things.
But you're going to put it out anyway.
I mean, we'll see.
Cause you put everything out.
Right. That was a long time ago. We probably wrote 300 songs over the past 2 years.
Okay.
Well, going back to that first, Chase, when we asked what the plan was when you put the band together, and you said you had no plan. Is it, and 10 years later now, you're still very much together, and we talked about all the great stuff. Now, do you guys sit down and talk about the future albums, or is it
very much so?
We are very intentional, huh?
Very intentional, and a lot of vision planning and goals and like responsibilities and assignments. And I don't want to say you run it like a business, but you just have to be, like you said, intentional and very careful with, I've been very convicted by the amount of like love and that people have for this music. And I want to do what's best by it. You got to be just trying to respect it.
Cool.
Well, I wish you guys all the success. I'm excited to see you at Bonnaroo. I'm excited to see how the show has developed and expanded. And, you know, I'm just glad to know that it stayed loud.
It's just loud. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you. Yeah, we're excited too. We'll make sure that we start building the dressing room now, so that
reinforce everything
structurally sound for all of us.
Plastic cups. Yeah. Go with plastic cups.
Yeah, padded walls for me. It makes things a lot easier.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks guys so much. I'm so glad to meet you. And we'll see you. We'll see you very soon.
Thanks guys. See you soon.
Bye. There you go, the Kids of Coin on the What podcast. Which bands this year that matter? Barry Porter, Lord Taco, Brad Steiner. So I know I mentioned this before, but before we get to the actual ticket giveaway, I think that we're going to have one of my favorite artists in the history of mankind on next week. If we can make it work, Barry, I am got the biggest man crush on Britt Daniel from Spoon. So if we can get it on next week, the new album is absolutely incredible. Lucifer on the Sofa. It is not even close. My favorite album of the last year. Go listen to that because Britt Daniel from Spoon on the podcast next week.
Nice. Very cool.
Do you even know Britt Daniel? Do you even know anything about this man?
Not as much as you.
Because if you would, I would appreciate you doing a little research on Britt Daniel. Look at him. Check out his pictures.
Look at him.
And then realize that he looks exactly. Look at him and realize he looks exactly like Nick Turner.
Oh, Nikki T.
Nikki T hates when I bring this up, but him and the Spoon guy look identical.
Does he talk like Nikki T?
No, a little bit more understated. But I think Nick grew
more understated than Nick.
Yeah, I think Nick specifically grew a beard so he would not look like Britt Daniel anymore.
He does look like Nick T.
I know. So
yeah,
Nikki T.
He doesn't look like me.
All these incredible transitions that you hear on the show, they are of Nick's incredible, incredible band. We'll put the link up to check out their SoundCloud and their Spotify here at the end of the show.
On YouTube, I'll put up a picture of Nikki T and Britt Daniel next to each other.
See if people can pick which one's
which one's which.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have got a possibility. I need to make total sure, but I'm 99% sure we will have tickets for the festival again this year, like we do each and every year. So this is our yearly show meeting where we discuss literally on the show how we're going to give these away. That will end up being something really standard that we do every year. Yeah. So consider this our promotions meeting. How are we giving these things away?
Well, we've tried to give them away for the last 2 years, and it keeps getting canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor Jack. I can't imagine. Oh, well, maybe she'll win again this year.
Okay.
I doubt it. But
still not hearing any ideas yet, guys.
What do you want to do, an essay?
An essay. I love
an essay.
That.
Yeah, I like that.
You know what we could do, actually, because we've never done it before? We should come up with some sort of, like, graphic design thing. Something that makes you creative and you have to whip up something graphically for the show.
I like it. Okay. I like it. Something about our show or about Bonnaroo?
Let's be honest. It's about us.
Okay. I like it. Much better. You're getting there. I like it. Yeah.
We gave away at my old radio station, we gave away Alabama Shakes tickets. Was it Alabama Shakes tickets or Shaky Knees or something like that? I had like 200 people make pictures of me and Brittany Howard. It was just me and her Photoshop. So it was like me and her, where it's just like McCartney's head off and my head on Paul McCartney's body. That's funny. Me and her jamming together.
That's funny.
That's what I'm looking for.
When Cher came to Chattanooga many years ago, at the paper, we did a contest where we drew a car, like a cutout Cher, and people had to make their own fashion cutout thing.
That's cute. Like in
great.
Real magazines. Like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. It was awesome. You mix and match hats and skirts and all that. It was
For the kids listening, magazines were these paper publications that you would read on a weekly basis.
I had one here I would show.
Yeah, they're from the 1900s.
So is Barry.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a good start. Maybe, you know, we can do it that exact thing, Barry. And on either socials or the site, Taco, we give people available pictures that they can use.
Taco's beard and put it on my face or your face or something. That'd be kind of funny.
If anyone touches my hair. Damn it.
Yeah. I was waiting for you to go there.
If you want to win, stay away from the hair.
Stay away from the hair. All right, there you go. Anything else we need to get to this week?
No, I don't think so. Looking forward to your interview next week, and we'll have Jeff Cuellar on sometime soon. I'm very much looking forward to that. He's always great. You know, he's changed jobs, so maybe we can get him to give some inside history of Bonnaroo and festivals in general. He's
he better let it all out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Spill it.
I mean, yeah. It's not like he's under some sort of NDA anymore.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I don't know, people
spill it, pal. Spill
if you
it.
Listened to our show before, you know Jeff. He's been on a couple of times. He knows festivals and he knows the industry, and very excited to talk to him. So we got a lot of stuff coming.
As a very wise man once said, we got a lot of things. Got a lot of things. All right, Lord Taco, Barry Corder, and Brad, we'll talk to you next week on the podcast. Bye.
Consequence Podcast Network.